You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into a What If edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm the host of this wonderful show, and today's podcast is brought to you by Built Bar, a wonderful protein bar that is one of our great sponsors of the Locked On Pacers podcast. They have a great protein bar, and right now, if you use the promo code LOCKEDON and go to BuiltBar.com, you get $10 off your first purchase. That's right, go to BuiltBar.com, try that out. It's a wonderful protein bar. So, for today's What If podcast, taking you back, May 22nd, 2013. The Pacers are coming off one of, I would say, their best season in franchise in the last 10 years of the franchise, 10, 15 years, right? They won 49 games. They finished first in the division. They were the 3 seed. They're reeling in the playoffs, right? They just beat the New York Knicks, the team who was the 2 seed. They went and beat them in 6 in a really convincing manner, right? They basically were up 3-1, maybe even should have won in 5 games if George Hill doesn't go out with a concussion at one point. They're rolling. This is a team that is kind of having a newly minted Paul George, who at this point is a 22-year-old, I would say, blossoming superstar. Yeah, the combination of David West, who is just this powerful force of a veteran, George Hill coming off the removed from the San Antonio Spurs and whatnot, and then you add in Lance Stephenson and just a solid bench of Tyler Hansbrough, Gerald Green, Jan Mahimi. And you've got a pretty solid Pacers team, one of the league's 4 best teams at this point, because they made the Eastern Conference Finals, right? They head into Game 1 in the series. They're not favored, to say the least. They're going up against the Miami Heat, the power of the East, the defending champion, the team that I think won like 27 straight games during this season. And they go into Miami in Game 1, and they give Miami probably the scare of their life, right? I mean, up until this point, right, there's a few moments where the Heat have almost lost, right? So obviously they lost to the Mavs their first season, but then they have the Pacers in the previous year took this team to 6, up 2-1. I think Chris Bosh got hurt, so there was concerns, and then LeBron kind of turned it on the last 3 games. Him and D-Wade just crushed it and beat the Pacers in 6. Same thing with the Celtics. They go down 3-2 to the Celtics. But LeBron comes storming back once again to help them win 7 in that series, and then they go on to beat the Thunder. So this is probably the closest they come since that Boston series, and this is probably honestly the scariest matchup for LeBron post up into the state post championship LeBron, right? I think before that, could LeBron get over the hump? Well, now LeBron can. It's obvious. Now it's can he piece together 1, 2, 3, 4, as he said, 1 point in a row. So in this game, it's a back and forth game to start. You've got the Pacers basically jump out to kind of an early lead in the first half. Miami cuts it back, and you're just trading bars back and forth. I think at the end of the third quarter, they actually end up being tied, if I remember right, or it was either a tied or a one-point game. And you've just got this fantastic game, right? After 3 quarters, you've got, after 3 quarters, you've got Paul George basically going against LeBron. I mean, it's mano a mano at this point, right? The thing to remember is D. Wade by this time. I don't want to say the 12-13 is when you start to see kind of D-Wade fall off. He was still really good, and he finished this game with like a respectable, I believe he finished like 19 points, but definitely D-Wade is not the same player he has been the past 2 seasons. It's the beginning of the downtrend of D-Wade. But at this point, you can just tell it's PG versus LeBron. They go back and forth, and PG gets a couple of big threes in regulation to send it to overtime, and then he has this big shot. PG hits this, I believe he gets this huge three to go up by one in overtime with about 1.9 seconds left, I believe, is how much on the clock. I'm pulling the play-by-play, but I think in my head I remember 2.2 seconds left, right? PG gets fouled, hits 3 free throws to go up by 1, and it feels like for a moment the Pacers might be able to steal one in Miami. Then all hell breaks loose, right? So for some reason, Roy Hibbert, the stalwart rim protector who has been kind of really, at this point, I don't want to say LeBron neutralizer, but one of LeBron's most annoying opponents, right? LeBron is basically being pushed around into Roy Hibbert, where he's getting kissed the rim for every single shot, right? The one thing about LeBron that made him so good in this era was that he was a guy who was just so efficient around the rim. I mean, he was like a 60-something percent shooter. I mean, he was just such an efficient player, right? But with the way the Pacers played defense, it was Paul George played tight, and then if LeBron beat George, he would run into Roy Hibbert. Sometimes you'd even see Dave West out on guard him, and it was just like constantly throwing just these tough bodies at LeBron that made it just a pain in the ass for him, to be honest, like constantly. So, but for some reason, Frank Vogel pulls Roy Hibbert. Paul George overcommits on the inbounds pass. LeBron blows by PG to an open lane to the rim, puts the ball up for a layup, winning in overtime, giving Miami the first game, and ultimately giving Miami a critical game and would be a 7-game series where they beat the Pacers 4-3. So the what if at this moment is, what if the Pacers put in Roy Hibbert in this game, win game one? Do they win this series? Does this change the perception of this Heat team, who I think we all agree is vulnerable? They went to seven against the Pacers, then seven against the Spurs the next year, and the next year they played the Pacers again, went to six. And this Pacers team was just beginning, right? So the loss this year is not seen as heartbreaking as it obviously would be the next year when it kind of feel like that ends, that kind of closes their window shut, the loss the previous year. But there's a real chance this Pacers team could win this series, especially if they steal game one. You know, obviously they have a home game, they then have home court advantage. They obviously steal game two in this series, so maybe they don't win that one. But there's a real chance game one, you know, this kind of game winning shot kind of not to demoralize the team, but kind of puts them behind the eight ball in a series where they needed every break to go their way. Right. And I think the only way they win this series is in six. They're never gonna win a game seven in Miami. And I think this game is kind of critical, because if they get off this 1-0 start, if they somehow win game two, and they've got Miami on the ropes, and not that Miami was ready to fold, but this was a Miami team that just wasn't, you know, 2011-12 was the peak Miami team. This 12-13 team was really good, but they got by the skin of their teeth in a lot of series to be able to win the title, and that's a testament to LeBron and how great he is. But this Miami team was vulnerable if the Pacers could just get the right breaks to break their way. So I think the first, when I started, was, so what if Roy Hibbert enters the game? Well, is there a chance that LeBron makes the layup still? Of course. Does LeBron make another jump to win the game? Of course. We've seen LeBron hitting out in his career two game winners against the Pacers, right? He did it in 2017-18 when he hit that three-point shot over Thaddeus Young. So there's no guarantee here if Roy Hibbert enters this game, they win this game. But they certainly improved their odds, right? So that's the first thing, right? The second thing is, if the Pacers do win game one, do they win the series? Again, that's also not a guarantee, right? The Pacers won game two partially because they won game one, or they came out even stronger in game two. Now, is it a chance they win both those games? Sure. I mean, this Pacer team, if you look at the three times they played Miami, right? Those first four games against Miami, they always play really well, right? They're always back and forth close games that kind of the Pacers have to pull out in some way, right? You know, the only one they really didn't play well was game three at home in this series, where they just get crushed. And then game seven, right? Game three and seven are the crux points. Besides that, Pacers were in every game pretty much. They win. They blew them out in one of the games. They were back and forth in the other ones. Like, this Pacers team always played those first four games against Miami really well, and then they ended up falling apart in games five, six, and seven when it got kind of tight. And that's why the Pacers need to go up to as big a lead as possible, right? They needed a 3-1 lead so they could have the opportunity to maybe blow a game five to win game six and so on. So it's no guarantee that if they win game one, they win the series, but I think it does set this tone. So let's say they win game one, they win game two. I think then that's pretty rare, a team that goes up, loses both games at home, lose the series. Now, we've seen it, right? The Bulls, right? I guess the Bulls have reversed that, right? The Bulls went into New York down 2-0, lost both games in New York, came back and swept them, reverse swept them, basically. So we've seen it happen where you can reverse sweep the other way. It's not uncommon, and great players do it. But the Pacers go up 2-0 in this series, they probably win this series. Now, the question is, do the Pacers beat the Spurs? I think that's where you get kind of iffy on this one. It's why I've been hesitant to do this what if, right? The next kind of scenario is if they play the Spurs, they probably don't beat them. The Spurs are the best team in the league at this point. I mean, or not the best, the second best team in the league. I mean, they should have won the title this year. You know, a free throw by Kawhi and a bounce the other way. I mean, it would have been really, really hard. I think this Pacers team is one of the best three or four teams. I think you got to throw in Oklahoma City this season too, even though they didn't make the conference finals because of injuries. But those were probably the three or four best teams this season. And the Pacers of the three or four were the fourth best team, probably finished exactly where they should have finished. So let's say though, let's play this out again. Let's say they do beat the Spurs somehow, right? And then you're talking about obviously a legacy altering series, but in this game there's so many different things too that could have gone the Pacers way that didn't, right? So I mean, the thing about this first game, really this whole series, was there were so many things that broke either the wrong way or the right way in this weird way, right? So one, you had PG hit this amazing three that I think nobody thought he'd make, a 32-foot three-pointer. The fact that he even makes that shot in the first place, Tennessee overtime in the first place is kind of like where the legacy of PG gets born. And then at the end of this game, the fact that he gets fouled, right? There's Wade kind of fouls him, but it's not the best call in the world, right? He basically beat it. It's a huge break by getting that foul call there, you know, and it ends up evening out, right? But that's a huge part of that. I mean, in regulation, right? So they're basically trailing the entire way down, right? Not by a ton, but like it's 2 or 4 or 3, basically the entire way. And you get kind of lucky that Ray Allen misses a free throw. I mean, 17.7 seconds left. The Heat are up 91-89. And Ray Allen, who is, I'm sure Ray Allen, all-time great shooter, like, you know, at a portion level free throw shooter. I mean, you're talking a guy who in his career is 89.4% from the line. In this season in particular, he was 88.6. And this is a guy who is an all-time great free throw shooter, and to miss one of the final two was extremely lucky. Obviously, he would get his luck back in the NBA Finals this year. But, I mean, so for him to miss one of those free throws, too, was a huge break for this team. I mean, they just had a lot of things that just sort of broke their way ultimately, I guess, is maybe the right way to put it in this game. And get to this point in this series, a couple things that really broke their way, too, if you look at it right. Game two is a game where a lot of things have to go their way, right? I mean, it's basically the Roy Hibbert game. He has 29 points and 10 rebounds. But to pull this out, ultimately, like, down the stretch, they have to get another, you know, I think LeBron missed a big free throw in the end of this game, if I remember right. You have to get clutch shooting out of George Hill, who ends up making all his free throws, and we haven't seen him do that all the time. I mean, we saw that in the NBA Finals, but when you play with LeBron not doing that, you know, you got the fact that that basically LeBron turns the ball over in game two with 40 seconds left, like just a bad pass. Basically something that usually doesn't, you know, happen to LeBron. LeBron turns it over, I believe, back-to-back times, actually, at the end of this game when it's 95-93, which is something that, you know, you don't really see from LeBron, right? Something that's, you know, just the fact that the Pacers win game two almost evens out what happened in game one, right? Because the luck kind of swung their way in a way you don't usually see with LeBron. The Pacers, the fact they won game six. I mean, there's the game six what if, right? If Roy Hibbert doesn't say those stupid comments, that they play better in game seven. That's the other what if of this series, right? If Roy Hibbert keeps his mouth shut and doesn't say no homo, which is just, I mean, stupid thing to say. Let's put it that way. Do they win the series, right? And so there's so many things in this series where it feels like, even when you talk about, like, well, what if this happens? What if this happened? They ultimately probably played out the way it should, right? I mean, I think the Heat were the better team. They had LeBron and whatnot. But there is a scenario where a couple, right, game one and game two breaks the Pacers both ways. Maybe they still lose game three, you know, but they win game four. They go up 3-1. They have a game six at home to win the series. But I think about the Pacers, they never got a chance against Miami to close them out, right? Every time they got close, right, it was either 2-2, or in this series, for example, it was 2-2. Or the previous year, I believe, it was 2-1. And they never, you know, they never had the right chance to sort of, like, put the nail in the coffin. Or when they did, they kind of it was never close enough, right? LeBron just sort of, like, even on a 2-1, they were down 2-1, pulled him away far. For anyone's 2-2, he pulls him, like, he kind of comes out huge in a big game, blows him out and whatnot. And just, you know, luck never went their way. And that's why I don't feel like they would have won the finals, because I just don't – they would have had to get more luck in the NBA Finals. The Beatwood was one of, you know, a really good Spurs team that made back-to-back finals. Obviously, they were really, really good. So that's why I feel like the series kind of went the way it should. Obviously, if there's a lot of other things, right, if this series, well, they win the title, this it kind of changed the legacy of this team. It's probably, you know, a team that might have remained together a little longer, right? There's also the whole point, right? If this team wins this, I mean, a Pollard injury is a huge part of it, but if this team wins the title here and they reign together, I think you could have an argument that what would have happened, instead of being LeBron versus the Warriors, it might have been the Pacers versus the Warriors in 2015, right? If this, you know, and there would have been two contrasting styles of teams going against each other in a way that would have been really intriguing to watch, right? If you think about it, you've got the pace and space Warriors who basically, like, revolutionized the leagues with that kind of movement. But you have the Pacers who played more of a traditional style, right? They were a back-to-the-basket team. They had Roy Hibbert, a traditional center, but they were so good on defense. They were so long. They had such good rim protection that, like, they counteracted it, right? The Pacers were, like, you know, each team is a reaction to a previous team, right? LeBron and KD have similar teams that were just really just physically, I don't want to say bruising, but just like empowering, right? You had, you know, the Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant duo, which is just like a scoring machine. And then you had LeBron and D-Wade and Chris Bosh, another kind of scoring efficient machine. LeBron, the ability just to get to the rim at any moment, anytime, and bully his way was a huge part of why really the Grizzlies and the Pacers popped up in this time. Two teams that, you know, were more reliant on really defensive centers and then kind of a lot of other peripheral players. You know, the Mike Conley of the Pacers with Paul George, the Tony Allen when George Hill role is kind of the same realistically in terms of like the defensive guard who's more just like about defense and not necessarily scoring and that kind of thing. And just so in the veteran presence, the Randolph and West have similar comps, and you can kind of keep going down the list and so on, right? So, and then the because those two teams kind of couldn't get over the hump, then the reaction to that was the Spurs kind of the original pace and space in 14, and then the Warriors the extreme pace and space in 15 that sort of reacted to, instead of trying to go physical with LeBron, it was let's just put him out in the perimeter and let's beat him on the perimeter, and it obviously worked 3 out of 4 times or whatever you want to say. All right, let's take one quick break, and then I want to finish up kind of I want to play it out a full scenario and explain what I think would have happened. Today's Locked On Pacers podcast is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is a wonderful protein bar that comes in 16 amazing flavors. They're bars that cover 100% in chocolate. They're soft and easy to chew. You get 8 kind of chocolate flavors and 8 chocolate nut-free flavors in case, you know, you can't eat nuts. Built Bar is a great way for if you're healthy, if you're trying to be a healthy conscious person, if you're trying to lose or maintain weight, it's a good bar to kind of fill you up, also give you a nice high protein, build that muscle kind of up. You know, my favorite bar personally is the peanut butter brownie one, 20 grams of protein, 170 calories. So it's not a high calorie thing, but it's got a lot of protein to help you build that muscle if you need to. And if you use the promo code LOCKEDON right now, go to builtbar.com, you'll get $10 off your first order. That's right. If you use the promo code LOCKEDON, LOCEDON, and for you'll get $10 off your first purchase at builtbar.com. That's LOCKEDON and builtbar.com. All right, so let's just do one scenario quick, and then we'll wrap up this podcast. So let's say Roy Hibbert is in the – is enters the game, doesn't – or not – sorry, not get removed out of the game in game one. He can test LeBron at the rim, forcing him to take a bad shot, misses it. Pacers win 102-101. Take a 1-0 lead in Miami. Game two, Pacers, another great break, right? You know, end of the stretch, LeBron makes another mistake after mistake. Pacers pull it out 97-93, and it's just some clutch free throw shooting by George Hill. And it turns out really well for them. So then they're up 2-0 in this series. I think LeBron comes in and kicks their ass in game three the way he did already. I think that game was destined to happen. I think it was the Miami, like, you know, pissed off game. Because I think even, you know, in the one game one, I think Miami was pissed how they played in game two. I think LeBron was super angry and basically went out and kicked their butt. I think I was at game three, if I remember right. I think game four is interesting. The Pacers, they don't blow them out, but the Pacers kind of like hold this lead, right? So they basically, at the end of the third, go up, I think, by about 7, and they maintain it the rest of the game. In a really nice fourth quarter from Paul George, who has 7 points, and Roy Hibbert, another 7. They just kind of keep them at arm's length. I think that might happen still. I don't know if the Pacers team is really good at home when they were, you know, at their peak kind of this time. I don't know if LeBron's able to kind of still push him at home, right? So like at one point it's 89-91 with about 2 minutes left, and then you have Roy Hibbert, who does a nice, you know, clean up on the glass, putting it in, and then he makes a free throw, and then you got Lance, it's a huge shot, and then George Hill makes some free throws, kind of close it out, and PG obviously does the same thing. So, you know, I think they might win game three. I think they lose game five for sure. I don't think they call that a series in Miami. And then game six, that's the big one I think it comes down to, and this is where I'm iffy. I think LeBron always has another gear to go to. You know, I think when they were up 3-2, he kind of just mailed it in, especially in the fourth quarter. You know, the Pacers basically, you know, I think it's tied going into the half, and then the third quarter they kind of blow them out, and then they don't really make up, and the Heat don't really make any push in the fourth. They said kind of say, "F it, let's go back home," and didn't matter, right? They won by 23 in game seven. But I think the Pacers can make this one competitive. But I ultimately think what would happen is LeBron would turn on his, you know, I would call Max LeBron, and they would, you know, he'd have end up finishing 40 points, and they would have won game six and probably won game seven and won the series. You know, I think there's an outside chance that maybe game six is like the moment that PG has like a 35-point game and they pull it out. He had a good game. He had 28 points, 8-5, and that's a really good stat line. And that's when, you know, I don't know about this. This is when I thought PG was going to become like the best player in the league in 2 or 3 years. I mean, that's, you know, at this point, he's 22 years old putting up these amazing stat lines. I mean, there's a chance that, right, going forward, he could. I will say if they do win this series, and make an NBA Finals, I think it buys them some leeway in the 2015 season when they bring it back in. Now, I think Lance might stay a little longer. There's part of that. I think there's more of a commitment to hold the team together because they get so close, right? I think there's some of that. The problem is this whole kind of what is scenario is, does Paul George avoid his injury, right? If Paul George avoids that injury, I think we're in a whole different world because the team is somewhat together in 2015, right? I mean, you don't have David West. You have to be trying to get rid of Roy Hibbert, but you don't, you know, ultimately, like, I think if this team makes a final, something like that, there's a chance that Hibbert, West, and George are still together that season. And I think 15 was their best year, ultimately, to make a real run at it because it's when LeBron was switching teams and there was no kind of king of the hill at the moment, right? At that point, the Spurs were, but they were kind of like the last grasp championship and there was no thought they were going to win back-to-back. And so, like, it really came down to, ultimately, like, the Warriors, right, where obviously the team had just kind of came out of nowhere, but to me, the Warriors were beatable in that moment, right? There was a scenario where, like, if they get a real challenge, they kind of come up and they crap in the moment, right? There would have been a Pacer team that had made a finals, had the experience and all this stuff. So it would be interesting to see, and I think that kind of would have been their chance. But sadly, it did not happen. Obviously, what happened, LeBron makes that layup. The Heat win in seven. Pacers lose the next year in six to the Heat. Paul just snaps his leg, and nothing ever is the same after that moment. And the bad luck of the Pacers kind of continues. I know it's kind of depressing to say, but the good thing is the Pacers I've turned the PG era into something I think a little more interesting, a little better. We'll see what happens in the next couple years. But I think they recovered from the PG era in a way that few teams have maybe recovered from losing their best player, right? I mean, you look around the league, no team has recovered the way the Pacers did. You know, no small market team has been able to rebound the way the Pacers have, right? I mean, this team this year, we're talking about won 49 games. Pacers have won 48 games back-to-back years with, you know, basically with teams that, you know, within like a five-year span, they've turned a team around from a 49-win team back to another 49-win team, basically, which is pretty hard to do when you lose your best, like literally nobody on the team is still in the Pacers. Not a single one of these players are still in the Pacers, which is saying a lot in 6 years. To go from to completely change a roster and still have as good of a team is a really good sign and something that should be an accomplishment in itself. All right, that's all I got for the Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, we're brought to you by Built Bar, our premier sponsor. Check that out. Go to Locked On. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKON to get $10 off your first purchase. Thanks, guys, for listening to this podcast. We'll bring you guys a new podcast on Monday with me and Tony.